The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Happy New Year! Welcome to the first episode of Dietary Requirements, the Spinoff's food podcast of 2019. Technically, it's the second episode, but we'll get to that story in a second. Ko Simon Day toko ingoa, and I am your host. As always, I'm joined by the Spinoff's food editor, Alice Neville, and Sophie Gilmore, the boss of Delicious Business. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
So today's episode is a summer special, a celebration of the great Kiwi barbecue. And 2 weeks ago, when this podcast was originally recorded, we did it the right way. We were set up at the Spinoff Overlord Duncan Greaves' sunny deck. We had a live audience of the Spinoff staff, and they'd been lured there in the promise of a barbecue cooked by our special guest, legendary chef Al Brown. It was a brilliant day. We'd hoped Al would cook for us, but apparently he can't talk shit and cook at the same time. So instead, he made me the pit boss. He sent me some recipes for ribs and cornbread and rather aggressively suggested he would critique my work. Seeing as I think the world of my skills in the kitchen, Alice and Sophie thought this would provide some welcome perspective.
Reality check. Yep.
Unfortunately, the recording of our beautiful lunch was eaten by the technology and lost to the ether forever. The evidence that Al told me my food was delicious was gone. When producer Tina came to me to tell me the sad fact, I was so upset that I had to take the rest of the day off, an emotional sick day. I was so proud that Al Brown liked my food.
Stress leave. And actually, for the first time ever, Simon's not bending the truth. Al did like Simon's
I can't even
food.
Remember that, though. Did I say that?
Did I say that?
Thankfully, Al has agreed to come back. And although we're not in quite the glamorous location as Duncan's desk, he's in the studio with us, hopefully provide some technological safety. Welcome back, Al.
Kia ora. Thanks for having
me
back.
Welcome back.
We really appreciate you coming back. And for the record, how were the ribs and the cornbread?
Look, it was a wonderful day, wasn't it? And, you know, I think sometimes when you're cooking, you have a lucky day.
Happy about that.
But no, I'm an honest guy. I can't tell a lie. You nailed it, mate.
Thank you. I really appreciate
amazing.
That.
I would,
although, you know, missing some salt in one recipe and I think playing havoc with some chili, the cayenne pepper,
I worked
with another, but it actually worked out bloody well.
So the recipes for Al's Carolina ribs and cornbread, and I did a Mediterranean pork rump steak as well. They're on the spinoff.co.nz, where I do make the note that I added 6 times the recommended amount of cayenne pepper by mistake. I read teaspoon is tablespoon. And I also forgot to add salt to my cornbread. So it was a good day, but not a perfect one.
But you cooked slow and you cooked fast and you cooked well.
It was hot.
I thought it was really delicious.
It was delicious.
Even if this podcast doesn't inspire other people, it certainly inspired me. I went home and made cornbread that night. I've since had Al's garlic chops. I have been discussing a ribs fest with some friends as well. So thanks anyway.
Thanks, Al Brown. Because my big memory from that, and I put it into the story, is how your philosophy is that secret recipes shouldn't exist. You know, food is for sharing, as are the techniques and the stories behind them.
Quite an emotional read, if anyone would like to read Simon's story about the lost podcast.
It's been an emotional 2 weeks.
Yeah. Is that all it's been?
I lost my podcast. You know, it's all been good.
It's a death. It's gone.
Absolute emotional roller coaster.
Very sad.
But here we are, back on the up.
And we wouldn't be here without our wonderful sponsors. And the Spinoffs food section is brought to you by Freedom Farms. Freedom Farms believes that everyone who eats meat has a responsibility to know how those animals have been farmed, and they're dedicated to providing you with the best pork, free-range chicken and eggs. And they also love barbecues, and they donated the ribs and rump steaks for the last recording. Today we've put the coals away, though. It'll be a little bit dangerous getting the big green egg out inside the studio, but we do have the camping stove. You're not meant to cook with that inside either, but hopefully if no one hears from us outside in the office in about an hour, they'll come and rescue us.
What's our heat sort of alarm situation like?
Oh, don't burn it. We've cooked in here before.
Cool.
I made my best ever cacio e pepe on.
That was using hot water, not
there was not
oil.
A lot of oil.
We'll find out.
Mm. Okay.
And if we do set the alarm off, it'll be funny.
It'll be a lol.
Yeah.
For Bunkles record number 3.
Yeah, exactly.
We're gonna attempt to relive the last recording and talk about the great Kiwi cultural institution that is the barbecue. But as well as, you know, steaks and ribs and sausages, we're going to discuss some of the alternative things that you can throw on the barbecue. And today, Al has got some power fritters. Alice has made some corn fritters. And because it's so hot, and I was a little bit afraid to cook again because I didn't want to have a blowout after the first piece of good luck, I'm going to make a cocktail.
Ooh. I've got a mystery fritter too.
Oh.
I'm excited about the mystery fritter.
Oh my gosh, can we do it like MasterChef where you close your eyes and you have to guess the ingredient?
We can.
I'd quite like you to do that with my ones too, because there's 20 ingredients in them.
Oh my God.
Okay. Have you got a fritter as well?
Fritterish, yeah. It's a veggie croquette, but it's a recipe that I would suggest people could make on the barbecue as an entree.
Mm.
Croquette sounds quite French.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Fritter. Where did the word fritter come from?
Friteur. I'm not sure, but
I don't know. Should I look it up?
Could make it French or friteur.
Last time I forgot to provide a biography of Al for those who have never heard of him. I suspect that those people are few and far between at this point.
In another country, maybe.
I've reduced
our
international
audience.
We have
large.
A lot of international listeners.
Huge. We're huge in Belgium.
Big in Canada.
Yeah. Well, we should be. I was a chef at the New Zealand Embassy in Belgium.
Oh, great. And
so
you
we could have.
And yeah, the Montreal.
And you have Canadian history. Yeah. So Al's just bringing in listeners from all over the world.
I've forgotten her name.
Brigitte.
Hopefully Brigitte is out there today.
Yeah.
Sugar pie.
Yep.
So this, I tried to get you into 2 sentences your whole life.
Oh, okay.
Broke through with fine dining in Wellington, where you ran Logan Brown. She had your name in the restaurant even. And then an epiphany and moved to Auckland where he taught us all to chill out about food and showed us the joy of relaxed dining that can still be really, really, really high quality. Is that close?
No, I think that's pretty good. Yeah.
What's the epiphany that made you move to Auckland?
I sort of thought that like so many New Zealanders, if you take something on, you think you have to be the best, and it was all about fine dining, I guess. And I thought, well, if I want to be the best, I have to do fine dining. But and we did that, and we did it really well, I think, and we won awards and bits and pieces, but I never really felt that satisfied. I sort of felt like the coat didn't fit. So I stuck with it for a while, and then I wasn't going to do any more. And I left the business partnership and was going to sort of write books and do a bit of telly and things, and then got offered the opportunity to come to Auckland. And I guess I thought, well, you know, I could do another restaurant, but I sort of not really what I want to do. But then I sort of thought, oh, well, if I was going to do one, how would I do one and what would it be like? And I kept thinking, you know, it sounds blasphemy, but how do you commercialise the batch or the crib?
Yeah.
Because that's where we sort of ultimately, I think, Kiwis find their happy place, I guess.
Yeah.
The informality, the Anonymity. What's that?
It's often where you eat the best as well. It's
yeah.
Where you're getting fresh fish, scallops.
And people are dropping off a smoked kahawai.
Yeah.
You know, someone's got half a Christmas cake left that they bring over and all those sorts of. So informality is just absolutely celebrated. And it doesn't matter whether you're a high court judge or a freezing worker or a share or anything. All that sort of stuff goes out the window.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's since then, and I think that that's what we should be hanging our hat on is, you know, we should own informal dining. That's what we do so well.
I can barely imagine you in fine dining now. You know, so yeah. Famous is your approach to the simple and the delicious and the, as you said, the kind of Kiwi way, but... Were you rocking foams and jellies and tell us what was on the plate, Al?
No, I didn't. Look, and I really never did, you know, and that was pre-tweezer.
Yeah.
You know, that was pre-flowers.
Yeah.
And schmears and foam.
Not an astute.
But I just sort of that whole, it was still really enjoyable and it was creative, but it just felt like the jacket didn't fit and I always felt uncomfortable a little bit around it, that's all. But we did a good job. And there's still, you know, Steve and Sean are still doing, you know, Logan Brown's still open. Doing a great job in that area. But it was quite liberating coming up here and having a go at doing something that I thought was what we wanted or what might go well.
I can't imagine you slapping the phones out of your patrons' hands at Logan Brown and say, hey, you guys came out here to talk to each other and to eat some nice food. Put those away.
I do a bit of that.
So I watched them do that at Depot one day. It was very, very funny.
So is Depot, your famous Sky City restaurant, is it framed around the idea of the Kiwi batch? I didn't realise.
Absolutely.
It is. Yeah. Great.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can see the barbecue.
Feel a bit,
you know, hence,
it's a bit nautical and it's a bit...
Well, hence the tin cups, hence the mismatched cutlery, hence the raw bar, you know, because that was all about, we used to have 2 weeks a year at Castle Point Campground and everything was around low tide and we would dig for pippies and we would get power and kina and all those sorts of things. And we used to cook, obviously, on manuka and hardwoods. So hence the oven, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that sort of mismatchedness that I think, you know, when you walk into a batch, you know, there's the cutlery drawer's always jammed and it's full of things that no one's ever used or, you know, and
the
there's one good pillow and,
you
know, and there's one decent chair and, you know, all those sorts of things.
I like the sheets from the 70s, the pink ones that are really thin but still going.
The old eiderdowns
and the top
of the wardrobe and things,
When Depot opened, it was sort of people were like, oh, they don't take bookings and the wine comes in a tumbler and all these things that now are just kind of like, But back then it was almost...
It wasn't even that long ago, was it? People have tried to recreate it. I mean, there is so many attempts at casual that are pretty contrived now. I think that there's something really authentic about Depot and that's probably because it was... the first of its kind.
But I think the big lesson is you sort of, you know, I was pretty intimidated coming up to Auckland and opening Depot and I just sort of thought, oh, well, look, you know, we'll just keep our head down and do what we do and we treat everyone the same. And we had the sort of don't you know who I am people turn up and it was kind of like, no, we don't.
It'll be
40 minutes. But we have them everywhere.
Of course we do.
But that no reservations. I mean, it's like if I come to your place for dinner, we don't walk in the door and sit down and eat, do we?
No.
Stand around and have a drink for at least an hour.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, and
it's funny because it's like quite uncultured, isn't it, to, you know, assume that you need a table instantly. Like, if you go out for dinner in New York, you happily wait 2 hours for a table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the sort of, you know, the tumbler, you know, I remember being served a wine in the tumbler by a guy called Matt Hanna, who started Armadillo in Wellington, anyway, and Joe's Garage in Queenstown, et cetera. And I remember holding it, and it immediately felt, you know, traditional tumbler is one of the great designs of all time. It feels, you know, it's just for your hand, feels amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And look, that someone rang me about 2 weeks, someone that I admired and loved, said, I've heard you're serving wine in tumblers. You can't do it. You'll go bust in a couple of months.
It'll be the death of you.
And I sort of, there was silence on the phone, and then I sort of thought, oh, what can I say to this? And I suddenly realised that that evening at 7 o'clock, I was at 30,000 feet drinking it out of a plastic cup, and so was everyone else on the airline. Yeah. And yeah. So at least we were in a, you know, so it didn't feel...
Yeah.
You know, and if you want it in a stem, by goodness, we won't blink an eyelid, you can have it in a stem, you know. But it's funny, most people enjoy just that, you know, it keeps taking the formality away.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think...
We're hopeless with formality. Kiwis are hopeless. We feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. We do it badly.
Yeah.
And, but we do informal very well.
Yeah.
I think that's why we're so good at barbecuing.
That's exactly right.
Standing around talking shit as much as you're cooking.
Nice work bringing that back.
Yeah,
thank
nice.
You.
I'm a big way. Master.
But it's I'm gonna slightly disappear for a second because it's very hot in here, and it's very hot in Auckland. So I'm gonna make a little watermelon cocktail. This is air conditioning for your mouth.
Ooh,
it's literally
air conditioning for your mouth.
It's literally gonna be handmade.
Wow.
And I've just washed my hands, so you can.
As usual, Simon plays down his own work. This better be the best cold drink I've ever had in my life, Simon.
I would muddle this, but it's just, you don't get the most out of your watermelon. You leave a lot of chunks.
Okay.
Oh, I see.
He's roughly throwing it.
What's your secret on the melon, Simon?
I meant to look them up. I'll give them a shout out posthumously. There is this...
Posthumously,
they're not dying. retrospectively, thank you for sub-editing me live, Alex. Well,
and two of us just looked at the wall. I didn't have any idea what was going on.
There are these farmers that come to the Parnell Farmers Market where I sell flowers every Saturday morning with my wife. They grow pumpkins in the autumn. And up to Christmas, they have watermelons in the summer, and they are unlike any watermelon I've ever tasted. You have to wear a wetsuit almost when you're cutting these apart. They're so juicy and so sweet. They're from North Waikato, Auckland.
That's a good hookup.
Yeah, they are, and they're really, really lovely people. You get a watermelon the size of a one-year-old.
Interesting.
Like, what's he going to say to match that hand movement? That is quite a particular size.
For $10. And this is actually Terry Gould. I pointed him to the watermelons, my boy Terry, and he pointed me to this recipe, which is his, but I've renamed it Air Conditioning for Your Mouth.
No, okay. I like that. Catchy.
I actually recently discovered the difference between a really tasty watermelon and one that is not tasty.
I had previously thought...
They were all the same.
It's a bit like an avocado. It's a bit of a lottery, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. I mean...
When you're in the supermarché, what's your...
You know, there's no way of knowing.
Do you tap?
They're incognito.
It's weight. First of all, it's weight, and then it's the tap, I think. You know, nice and hollow. And a very firm, very firm. As firm as you can get it. So heavy, firm, and sounding hollow. Oh, yeah, that's good.
I was wondering if the listeners can hear that squelching. Simon's got his hand inside the jug of... it's a glass jug, which makes for interesting viewing. But he's...
it's an interesting
pulping.
Start.
He's hand-pulping the watermelon.
I've injured myself multiple times recently whilst cooking. Not even cooking. Like
cuts are.
Yeah, so I'm a bit worried that he's going to smash that glass jug and it's going to...
It's the perfect size.
You know,
perfect pulping. I once actually, on that note, tasted. I remember when we were students and we couldn't afford organic vegetables, and we have a friend who's from the Hawke's Bay and his family farm organic vegetables and have for years and years. So Ben Bostock arrived at a weekend away in Taupo, and he brought with him an organic pumpkin. And I think I was organising the cooking for the weekend, so I'd done this big sort of like camp-sized supermarket shop, and wherever I'd done that, there weren't organic pumpkins, or we couldn't afford them or whatever. And we roasted them right side by side, and I was just mortified at the enormous difference. One of them actually tasted like pumpkin, and the other one looked like something that resembled pumpkin, but had I been blindfolded, probably could have been anything.
Really?
It was so fascinating. And then, you know, that was the first time I ever learned about how you plant female and male plants next to each other so that they can what's it called when they...
Chat.
Shag. Pumpkin
sex. That's the official terminology.
Wind each other up.
Yeah. But I thought it was so fascinating how they pollinate and grow.
I can't say I know all the details of that, but I'll be Googling.
Well, perhaps you can talk to us about the beer.
Oh, yes. So
the beer. That you are passionate and knowledgeable about.
So this was, you know, a while ago, and I drink a lot of beer, but I'm going to think back to the beer that we drank during the original podcast that was Lost, which was...
I recall that.
You recall? Liked that.
Yeah. It was the Trader's Scotch Ale from McLeod's, and McLeod's is from Waipu in Northland. And I was kind of like, oh, a Scotch Ale for a barbecue, interesting, because you know, the your go-to for a barbecue is like a Pilsner or a Pale Ale or something sort of thirst-quenching and light. But this is kind of a smoky, almost malty, caramelly, quite amber-coloured beer. Quite full-bodied, and it's got horopito in.
Simon's filling our glasses with ice.
Yes, he is.
I would like to know what that noise is. And he's just put a reasonably serious amount of vodka in the cocktail, which has made me quite happy.
Yeah. So, yeah, a little bit of horopito in there, which gives it a bit of warmth. And it was actually really nice. And I think it would have gone really well with the meat, the ribs, and the pork steaks.
And the cornbread.
And the cornbread. It did go very well with the cornbread.
There was a slaw floating around too.
Well, that's right. The slaw was good.
That was good.
I really liked the flour.
And the peppers stuffed
The stuffed peppers I made.
You did those.
With the white cannellini bean?
Yep.
Yeah.
Fiona Smith recipe from Cuisine.
Also delicious. I actually, both Elle and I weren't that sure about the beer before we tried it, right? And said it was really delicious. And you would, it was quite a big bottle and you would have one.
Yeah.
It's not what they call...
You wouldn't smash
it. Is it sessionable?
Yes.
Yes, not sessionable, but
not
bloody
sessionable,
delicious.
But yeah, really nice. Yeah, a Scotch ale. I did some research.
Oh, thank you. Because
last time I didn't, I don't know, I was from Scotland.
I was asking Alice to teach us about Scotch ale, and she said that thing again that she always says, which is basically brewers can just call their beer whatever they like.
Yeah, pretty much. But no, Scotch ales come from Edinburgh originally, the 1800s. And they're also called wee heavies, which is nice.
Is that
wee
what they call
heavy.
It there?
Well, like another name for a Scotch ale is a wee heavy.
It sounds like a lot more fun, doesn't it? A wee heavy.
A wee heavy. Oh, it's a wee heavy. I'm not really good at the Scotch.
You kind of sounded like Mrs. Doubtfire just then.
Well, that's quite
she's
Scottish.
Yeah, she's Scottish.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
So can I just ask, is that a Scotch ale, what category of beer does it fall into?
The Scotch ale category.
So it's not a dark beer?
It looks
ale. Dark to me.
It's not a dark beer.
I mean,
beer.
You're speaking to some beer rookies, Alice.
Yeah,
I'm not the only one.
I mean,
it comes under the ambit of
as
the
I
Scotch
may
beer.
Have mentioned, it's not. There's no sort of set categories. It's not I wouldn't call it a dark beer. I'd call it an ale.
It was nice with food.
A little, quite kind of dark, but it's not a dark beer like Guinness or, you know, or the those kind of beers.
More reddish.
It's an ale.
Isn't it?
It's your classic kind of ale.
Okay.
And it's kind of reddish. Yeah.
The other thing that was kind of interesting that we drank last week with the... Last week. It was only yesterday that
it
we were all
together.
It was just
the other day.
We had red wine, and it was from Spain, and it was called Hecula. And we...
have to say that was bloody delicious.
Yeah. Again,
yeah.
Pretty apprehensive about having that on a hot afternoon.
It was on point.
Yeah. It had almost no... sweetness to it, so it was really savoury and had a little bit of tannin and a bit of kick without being too hardcore for the middle of the day, and yeah, overall we really loved it. I'm going to...
The most important thing...
He's going to say something about price.
Yeah, I am. The most important... Yeah. I'm a sucker for a deal. The most important thing to remember about the Hecula is you cannot get a better priced red wine in the country. $13 for a delicious Spanish
very cheap.
Barbecue red wine.
Hmm.
$18
it's
elsewhere.
It's the sort of one that you put inside a brown paper bag and everyone goes, wow, this must be $90.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, yes.
All those wine snobs out there wouldn't have a clue.
The house, and that's the price of the house red.
They're from Fine Wine Delivery Co.
I went onto the Fine Wine Delivery Co. website specifically To buy that wine after last week.
Oh, so did you order
Better Living
cases?
Everyone.
Better Living. I hope you clicked through from a spin-off article.
Oh, yes, to get your stats up.
Yeah.
I see. So should we reminisce on barbecuing?
Yeah, or should we talk about this drink that Simon's just
Simon,
served?
Simon, it's ready.
It's beautiful. It's pink. Cheers.
Gorgeous colour.
Cheers.
Lovely.
We're just pausing for our photo.
Note the time for the photo.
Yes. Okay, should we take a sip?
How is it? Strong?
What time of the day did you clean your hands?
Not too strong.
Was that just pre?
Nice kick.
It is delicious.
Not too strong at all.
It's very summer.
It is air conditioning for your mouth. It's a good tagline. You should copyright that.
You should
trademark
it.
And a little floater on the top there of cranberry juice, was it?
Ooh.
Yeah, just to lengthen it. Little acid. And
to make the watermelon more watermelon-y.
And also because it's hard to get a lot of liquid out of your watermelon. It's
right.
A lot of effort to make a lot of drinks.
I mean,
so
there's a good-looking mush there.
You can cheat a little with the cranberry juice.
And you were absolutely going for it too. So
what's it called when you...
Muddle?
You muddle your watermelon and your mint and your vodka, strain it into a glass over ice, top it up with some cranberry juice... garnish with a little bit of mint, and within 5 minutes, your whole body temperature will be a half degree cooler.
Yeah, and I'd keep it away from the kids because they're going to be attracted to that colour.
Definitely.
And they're going to be able to bowl it.
That's a very good point.
You don't want the kids embarrassing their
parents like an RTD.
Like I did at the turn of the millennium.
Oh my God.
An RTD for 7-year-olds.
Yes. Yeah.
No good.
So on the barbecue, I reckon the most important thing I learned from cooking Al's recipes and for that day was the extent to which you cook the ribs. I've previously had ribs which I hated were undercooked. They were tough to get off the bone. They got stuck in your teeth. They needed more time. I've had ribs that have been cooked probably for too long and they just flew off. They just flew off the bone. And yes, that's a great in some circumstances, but you want to be able to hold on to them. And so Al suggests in this recipe that you can find on the spinoff.co.nz to check them after an hour and a half for tenderness, for a light, juicy bounce, but not quite falling off the bone. So every 20 minutes from about an hour and a half onwards, and then you can take them out, let them absorb the flavor for a day or two, and then hit them with some real hot coals.
I think that's a really good point too. I think too many people are hung up about how they have to get everything right immediately, you know, with one shot.
Yeah.
I mean, I still, you know, I cook for a living and at times, you know, if you want to check your fillet of beef and slice a bit off the end and have a look and see how it's going.
Yeah, there's no
by
shame
all
in
means,
that.
No shame in that. Yeah. Go in there. So
I find it funny also though, the people that tend to have less experience in the kitchen takes such an academic approach sometimes, you know, with the thermometers, like all the gear.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, you probably could just touch it.
Lots of people are going the thermometer way now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
I was somewhere in the weekend and a novice barbecue chef was talking about his thermometer quite a lot.
A lot of thermometer chat. Yeah, and you're like, why don't you
that's his
go. It?
That's his security blanket. You know, that's as if it's that amount of degrees, now it's ready. And good on him. More the power to him.
But for speaking of cooking technology, we touched on this last week, but I want to go over it again. What do we think of induction cooking?
Yes. We hate it.
This is important. We have to bring this public service announcement.
Loathe?
We hate it.
Yeah.
Tell me why.
We all had different reasons for hating it, so Al, you can go first.
Well, I think if there's no romance in it, I need to see flame and heat. I can't, you know, this and that sort of whole electronic number game. You know, I didn't play Space Invaders or do any of that when I was a kid, so I find all that sort of technology quite disparaging and hard to understand. And it's just, I need to see a flame. That's for me.
Good
I
on
need,
you.
Need to see a flame. I've got induction in my new apartment. I've been there for 4 months. I've had toast for 4 months.
I've yet to approach
and
it.
I swear that's true. You can ask my girl.
Do you know what it will do is boil a pot of water faster than you can say anything? But
That's about its only benefit. I think.
I see it as a flaw.
Yeah, true.
So I think I would finish third if I was given an opportunity to compete in New Zealand MasterChef, and I would lose. I would lose the final because I'd burn the pine nuts. And with induction, I wouldn't burn them. I would light them on fire. I need a degree of an opportunity to make mistakes fix them. And with induction, I burn stuff so quickly.
Does anyone know anyone who loves induction?
My mother-in-law.
Well, there you go.
Well, that's great.
I think you do it, what you're used to.
Yeah, but it's bullshit.
Do you know what, though? I think because you have such a rhythm when you cook or a cadence or whatever, you put things on in the time that you think they'll be ready. So if I'm cooking with induction and I put a pot of water on because I think, oh, the meat will be rested in 20 minutes and it boils 1 minute later, you end up with like just water everywhere and topping it up because it's all, the timing's out.
It fucks everything up.
Absolutely. And also I admitted last time, which I'm happy to admit again, that I find it really difficult to control the temperature of induction. So difficult that I recently went to see a friend who had just had a baby and I was filling up her freezer with macaroni cheese and managed to split bechamel sauce.
Well, that's right.
I'm not sure that I was aware that that was possible, but yeah, once it's gone, it's gone.
And I don't like how some induction goes to 11. Does induction think it's the spinal tap of cooking or something?
11, does
it? It goes to, I was cooking at Sam Gallagher and
Anna Holt's
house.
It's just trying to be way too clear.
What does the pee mean? I feel like every time, you know, it gets hysterical every time there's a drop of water
breaks.
On it. But what's the pee? It's always flashing the word pee.
I don't think my mum's one has the pee.
The letter pee.
I do wish my mum would come around and clean beneath my gas hob, though. At my house, that shit gets pretty rank.
That's what people say. Oh, it's easy to clean.
It's not easy to clean. It's easy to break every time you try to clean it.
What, the gas or the induction?
No, the induction.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you not just wipe down the hob at the end of
Just wipe
cooking?
Down the hob, Simon.
Come on, Simon.
Anyway, I'm getting mine changed out to gas. So. Yeah. And I'll have a bottle. Yeah, there's not gas in the building, but I'll have a small bottle.
So I think it's official. Fuck induction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, fuck
Definitely
induction.
Definitely fuck induction.
But thinking of fire and seeing the flame is really interesting because obviously it's a really big part of barbecue. I think it's really exciting to have watched New Zealand barbecue go from sausages over gas to...
Well, we went from wood first.
Yes.
Mm. I think, you know.
I don't remember that.
Really?
I'm not old enough. It's actually Al's birthday tomorrow. He's turning 40.
5'4".
And also Mark Kelleher's birthday tomorrow.
Yep.
Yeah.
So our colleague Mark Kelleher
and Rebecca
Bex,
from Cazador.
Yeah,
Bex from
Cazador. Former Dietary Requirements guest star. You might remember her from
such
episodes
as the one
I haven't
about
been
depression.
To Cazador.
As the sausages
to
one. Have you not?
No.
And you're going tomorrow?
No, I'm going tomorrow night.
Oh, cool. That's exciting.
Yeah, it is very exciting.
Cool. So hopefully it's not all split into two.
But our barbecues, before we got gas, we had wood.
Well, when I say that, we just grew up with a 40 or a 20-gallon drum that we used to load with, you know, had holes in the bottom to draw the air, and we would start with kindling, and we would have dried manuka, and then we would have a hot plate or we'd have a grill over that, and that's what I recall. And it was those are some of the sort of nostalgic things that you remember, the smell of the, you know, the first smoke when you're getting that going, and then waiting for it to get, you know, set a bed. But then, of course, gas came along and everyone went, oh, shit, don't need to worry about all that smoke and carry on. Yeah. We can just turn it on and we can be cooking in 5 minutes.
My dad calls it
so
Manuka.
So the convenience.
It's quite weird, isn't it?
Manuka?
Is that a Kanuka? Thing that New Zealanders say?
Well, Simon, I mean, give us the...
Alice is out today.
Would be the...
Okay.
It does have a macron on the A, so it should be sort of Manuka. But not Manuka, but yeah, they're probably
Manuka.
Right. No, Manuka. You want the emphasis on the first syllable, so they're kind of right.
Oh, wow.
I mean, yeah.
We digress.
It's a beautiful word.
But
that's
I think nice. Throughout human history, we've lost beautiful things when we've pursued convenience.
Yes.
And smoke at barbecue time was something that was missing for about a decade.
Yeah. And look, I think it was all about convenience, and it was kind of, you know, it was modern, and you know, there were all those little round ones, weren't they? The little round, you know, with the three legs, those round plated barbecues, they were the first ones.
Yeah.
And then they went all and got all silly on us, and it was, you know, it was sort of like barbecues out of Detroit, wasn't it? The bigger the better and all that sort of thing. And
I remember. And now they're getting really nerdy, like really high tech.
I think people are turning away. Look at Weber's, just, you know, the traditional Weber, the charcoal.
The kettle.
Yeah, that's what we have. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think the high tech ones were the gas ones that have about 8 different hobs, you know, all these things in the lid.
Like the Bogan backyard.
They look like a small car.
Yeah.
A lot of them were all show and no go. The burners were way too low to the cooking surface. So they looked amazing, but they didn't have. To be honest, the 3 burner classic Kiwi flat top $199 warehouse barbecue was a pretty good little
halfer. Half a hot plate, half a grill. You know,
it was the Toyota Hilux of sort of
burn your sausages
of barbecues. So, yeah. You know, you could do good job on that. And I still like cooking on those.
Yeah, my in-laws are still. If someone's got one and they go,
we've got this old barbecue at the back, it's one of those. I'm always happy to cook on that.
Totally.
Because it's got plenty of guts.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are good. And also, I guess, the brunch tradition came about when people are at their beach houses and they're having late nights. That's when people used to start putting eggs and bacon on the barbecue and doing things that were different to just the, I think we talked about this last time, but the thing that I can't quite get my head around is the Kiwi mixed meat grill, where I feel like it would be better if you had the lamb chops one night and the sausages the next night, rather than on your plate simultaneously a sausage and a lamb chop and a chicken thigh but it just seems to be the norm.
As many meats as possible.
3 meat and 1 veg.
Yeah, it's really common, isn't it?
I do love it.
Yeah, well, we all have a nostalgic thing about it.
I want a sausage and I want a thigh and I want a chop.
Yeah, see, for me, I like it to be a bit more coherent. I'd be quite happy to do it one night at a time.
See, what I do is I visit the serving table, or often I like how it's left on the barbecue and served straight from there. I'd visit that 3 different times. So I'd start with my steak, and then I'd go back and get a sausage.
Steak with appropriate accoutrements.
When I get rid of the administration pretty quickly.
Oh yeah.
And then focus on the protein.
Right.
And just make 3 trips.
Oh, so you have like a degustation of meat rather than all on the plate at the same time.
Oh yeah. But what's, you know, we have all been doing degustation of meat on the plate, but now vegetables.
Yes.
Big time. I am cooking all vegetables on the grill now, whether they're green beans, it's broccoli, it's cauliflower, it's kumara, it's pumpkin.
Eggplant. Yep. I've been cooking
peas.
So
I'm struggling with
the barbecue.
Individual peas.
Individual peas.
They take a lot of turning with very small tweezers. But everything. I mean, I just sort of think, you know, I remember growing, you know, I sort of thought it was pretty trendy to do eggplant and peppers and zucchini and that sort of thing. But actually, you can do it all.
You can do everything,
Yeah, and I think that maybe people got put off because the original kind of vegetarian barbecue skewer, you know, the sort of generic situation. And I think a lot of people were put off by that. But you're right, there are so many things that are more delicious on the barbecue than they would be elsewhere.
And is that not the lick of char? You know, it's the burn on them that gives character to that vegetable.
Ross Lingy cookbook that came out would have been 10 years ago now. I cooked my way from the very beginning to the end of it.
Yes.
And I remember being so confused by him saying, just get the eggplant and put it directly on the gas hob.
Right. Yeah.
And tasting it for the first time, thinking, how am I ever going to cook an eggplant any other way?
Yeah,
because
totally.
That is where all the flavour comes out.
Mm. Yeah, so in my youth, I was fully vegetarian, so I'd kind of avoid barbecues because it would inevitably
that
be.
That iceberg got a little bit tiring.
Well, it wasn't even that. It was just those kind of raw but burnt veggie kebabs.
Veggie kebab.
Oh,
and they'd have made them specially for me, so you'd have to be like, oh, God, I'm going to force down this, like, raw
and
piece
that
of zucchini that's, like,
dehydrated mushroom.
Dehydrated mushroom.
Oh, gross.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I think is so funny about mushrooms? We were talking about this the other day. I didn't realise how much flavour, this is until I was at cooking school recently, that one can extract from a button mushroom if you cook it correctly. And here I was thinking that portobello was where all the flavour was. The button mushrooms are so cheap and so delicious if you just give them the space that they need in the pan and cook them with a bit of butter and handfuls, like one handful at a time. And it can make the most mushroomy of mushroom sauces.
Umami.
Mm. Umami.
Umami.
Shall we fire up the barbecue and
on that quotation note,
who's up first?
Yeah, who's up first?
Al Brown, everybody.
Oh, there we go.
Hard act to follow.
Yeah, that is going to be tough. So will you tell us what you're making? Or is that the
I think we mentioned this in the last podcast that never went to air, but was that I sort of think people ask me all the time, you know, what's the New Zealand dish to you, Al? And to me, I've always thought a fritter was the New Zealand dish, and a power fritter was that's what we grew up with, and the idea of as a kid, you know, we used to get the power in the rock holes and we'd be able to put it through the old mincer and turn the handle. And so it was one of my first recollections of actually providing for the meal.
Awesome.
And a part of that. And as I say, we would cook all the... We had a hot plate that we used to cook the power fritters on and the other bits of seafood. But we would also always, because I was from a farm, we would always do a hogget or a lamb chop. Mm-hmm. And what was when we used to go on holiday, we used to take a whole animal, like a whole hogget or a whole lamb, into the butcher, and the butcher would put it all into chops, and he would layer it in a chili bin, and then we would put the chili bin in the freezer at the butcher shop, and so it turned into a solid block of chops.
Yeah,
and so that would last for sort of 6 or 7 days because we'd open the top. We'd take the chops off the top, and the next ones below were frozen.
Oh my gosh!
And so it was a great way to.
I did that on the. We did the Whanganui River crossing at New Year a couple of years ago, and I enthusiastically said, "I'm keen to come along, but we're not cutting corners on the food. There won't be any of that reconstituted carry-on."
Yeah, bugger that.
And so I made a whole lot of meatballs for New Year's Eve and put them in 4-liter containers and froze them. And then took a big catering pot with me and paddled down the Whanganui River with the meatballs. And by the time it came to New Year's Eve, they were defrosting. So it was perfect timing.
Yeah.
Like Al's chops.
Nice. Al's just now making the pawa fritters
for
us.
Oh, my gosh.
If he burns them, we're all going to be evacuated.
Yeah. I also have strong memories of pawa fritters growing up, but I have to admit I didn't really eat them because A, I thought it was a bit gross, and B, I didn't eat meat or fish at all. I'm sorry. But my dad used to make them a lot, and he would dive and get them. And
are you going to try these?
Yeah. No, I eat them now. It's just when I didn't eat any. I have since eaten his power fritters, and they are nice. You don't want the gristly texture.
Well, I think food memories and food nostalgia contribute to the way that our food tastes, right? And when Al was speaking about that before, I thought, I wish I had power when I was a kid. But instantly to my mind came digging for tuatua at Waiheke, and whenever there would be a storm, we would race down to the beach and everyone would have a bucket and dig for the tuatua, come home, and they would either be turned into fritters or served with linguine, vongole, which was really, really delicious as well.
Nice.
Oh my god, these look great.
Have you ever seen a power like crawling out of its shell? That's weird. When my dad would go diving and get power and then like leave them on the deck. And because you kind of forget they're actually alive and then they kind of crawl out of their shell like a slug.
Yeah, how wide?
Please help me.
Like a snail.
The whole power crawls out of its shell.
All in one go.
Yeah.
Wicked.
So we're sacrificing a little bit of soundproofing for health and safety. So if you hear any of the spin-off sort of inaction in the background,
send them an email, tell them to shut up.
toby@thespinoff.co.nz.
Comment on Facebook. We need more trolls.
Oh my gosh, these smell amazing.
They do smell good.
We have a segment on the show where we speak about the best thing we ate lately. And one of mine for the last one, so it's not a spoiler alert, was that I'd been to Amano just before Christmas and had a mussel fritter that was
you have spoken
the size of a side plate. So one big fritter came out, and it had a massive stack of cucumber pickles on top of it, sitting on top of some preserved lemon mayo. And it actually, I said to Al, reminded me of something that, you know, he would serve at Depot, but absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
And then when we spoke about the barbecue theme of the podcast, one of the revelations that I thought came out of it was when we were speaking about what one can serve at the Kiwi barbecue, or what do you serve when you've got people coming over? And Al said he likes to start with a cocktail of some description, so to make everyone a cocktail.
Like a watermelon magical thing.
One of Simon's air conditioning for your mouth cocktails. And then to follow up, he said, with a fritter of any kind. And I just thought, that is so genius. The only fritter I would have served probably when entertaining in the past would be a white bait fritter, but I really feel like...
We had white bait fritters at your wedding, didn't we?
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Shot Tom Madams.
But I really think that, I'm up for expanding my fritter repertoire.
Oh, my God, these look amazing. Oh my
Thank goodness. You, Al. We're about to get stuck into Al's power fritters. This is a... monthly reminder to not chew too heavily in the microphone.
Yeah. And I'm pulling the face that I pull when I'm in restaurants, and my husband's always like, wow, you look so happy. Like, overexcited about the food that may be coming my way. Yum.
Yum.
Cheers, everyone.
What have you put on top of there? A little writer type thing?
Little best mayo with some... Oh, yeah. Gherkin, some dill,
yum, capers.
Some capers and
red onion.
Wow.
Yum. It's real good.
And oh my God.
So perfectly chewy.
Mwah.
It's not it's not like getting a bit of gristle in
no,
it.
No,
so
not gristly. Yum. So
oh
good.
Oh my gosh.
I tell you, the thing with power is that it's very expensive if you don't gather it yourself.
Yeah.
However, for a long, long time, and I actually think it makes the fritter better, even though it's not in your fritter there. But I always cut my power with a bit of squid.
Oh, okay.
That like is a squid tube, you know, old plastic looking.
What does that achieve?
Makes it go
further. It's a similar texture, so it cuts the price if you were going to buy power and you wanted to stretch it.
Yeah.
Or you only got a couple of powers when you were doing it. But I think it also... you talked about the right amount of chew.
Mm.
I think the squid just sort of mellows that out and doesn't make it quite as
intense. That is rich. I think that was my objection to it when I wasn't accustomed to eating it growing up.
Yeah.
And then got served a power fritter, I found it quite intense, but I think maybe I've graduated.
I went on a boat trip for a few days in Dusky Sound in Fiordland with Fleur Sullivan and some other people. I wrote a story about it in a previous job. Yeah.
Is that
was in Cuisine?
On the
No, it was in, God, what was it called? Pure Salt was the company. Anyway, the story's online. I'll send it to you. And
Fleur just...
Is this Fleur of...
Fleur's place.
Oh, right.
And we were pretty much just eating what we caught. So we ate a lot of power, which I admit after a while I was like, I don't think I can eat any more power. But it's, you know, usually you don't have it often. It's
Did we find out if Al caught this power himself?
Well, funny you should say that power is from Dusky Sound.
Is it? There you go. Oh, there was a shitload of power down there in Kinna.
Is it, as a follower of your Instagram, Al, do you just go hunting and gathering every weekend, or is that the life that you're living? Because it looks great.
No, I don't. I don't do it nearly enough.
Right.
Hmm.
This is my mystery fritter.
I'm excited about
this.
So we've got
to try and guess that.
Has this got meat in it, though?
Yes.
No, I'm not going to have it. That's okay.
You should have not told her till afterwards.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh, that was a mystery.
Well, given your objections are not ethical.
I know, I just don't...
Before we move on, I wanted to do a quick shout out to Dill. I think Dill is really experiencing a renaissance.
Yeah, I agree.
Dill's
my,
good.
Our friend,
I've always been a big fan of Dill.
Our friend Ben Grant, former owner of Bird on a Wire with Sophie, he's going to name his first son Dill.
Quite a good name.
What, is he really vibing on Dill at the moment?
He loves Dill so much. We send each other texts when we're having Dill.
Oh, wow, okay.
I used to want to have children all named after herbs, like Basil.
Is Dill gonna...
What are the other ones? Can't remember.
How's Dill going to go at school?
He'll be right.
Dill sounds like he could get bullied.
A little bit, doesn't it?
Dill's absolutely asking for it, yeah.
But,
yeah.
Whereas Basil, everyone's going to love Basil.
Bears, old Bears, everyone will love Bears.
What is everyone's favourite item to dish that has Dill in it?
Oh. Mine is a McDonald's cheeseburger.
Simon Day!
There's Dill in that little onion. That's when I eat
I know there is, yeah.
So it's at the right time, a McDonald's cheeseburger is so good. Let's taste something better than a McDonald's cheeseburger.
Yeah, I can pass them around.
I reckon it's pork. I don't know, I'm just making this shit up.
Okay, so Simon, you and I get to name, you have to do one ingredient at a time, and Al has to say yes or no.
I'll go again.
Maybe it's chicken. I don't know.
Could do with some salt.
No, I'm not. Ooh. I'm not actually
right.
eating it.
A little bone pinch. I did add some more, but...
Red capsicum.
I feel like that's obvious.
Red, red
yes
onions.
Or no? You have to say yes or no to every...
Okay, well, it is pork.
See, I saw that. I got that.
I know, you
the
did get that.
The vegetarian picked it.
But it's wild boar.
Oh.
Wow.
So there's, someone dropped off a leg the other day and we cooked it slow in the oven yesterday.
Mm.
And that's the beauty of a fritter, is that it's kind of like this thing that you can throw a whole lot of ingredients yeah. at. It's and everyone still loves it because it's this kind of this lovely little soft with little bits of ingredients. You know, so in there is some pepper juice. That's just straight out of the fridge. Had some pepper juice.
Is there corn?
No corn in there.
Red onion.
Some red onion.
Dill.
Some parsley and some dill, because those are the only two herbs I had. And then I added a little bit of apple syrup and some not enough salt and pepper.
But the boar is so rich, and then the peppers and the pepper juice has nice sweetness that cuts through it. They're really, really good.
And stretching, it's a great way to stretch...
Yeah,
your catch, isn't it?
Yeah.
You just heat them on a pan, probably. I mean, they're warmish.
Sophie's now heating up her fritters, which are already cooked, because clearly she's lazy. Just kidding. Organised.
You're not allowed to be organised on this podcast. It's against the rules.
Is this, should I turn it back on?
Yes.
It's off. I'm going to get you to do that.
Al, do you tenderise your pawa?
Yes, I do.
What do you use?
A mallet.
Oh, my dad used to use a cricket bat.
Did he?
Yeah.
Or another thing, another great way to do is get a fork or even a carving fork.
Yeah.
And that holds it. That holds the power in place. And
then
just a good piece of beech wood. Yeah. I mean,
Driftwood? Yeah.
Driftwood from the beach. That's what I'm looking for.
He says he would do it on, like, the lawn and just bash them and then there'd be bits of grass on the pawa, but you'd just say there was coriander stalks or
That's
something.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you'll feel the muscle of the pawa let go.
Right.
It'll suddenly become soft and then, you know, that's where you're at.
What other meat? Or
that reminds me of kneading bread dough. You have to keep going until the gluten gets
stretchy. Gives.
That's right.
But is there any other food that requires a good beating?
Tenderisation.
Well, some people, of course, there's all different sorts of tenderise. Asian. I mean, things like kiwi fruit and pineapple that you could use for squid, that sort of thing that takes a little bit of the chew out of it, or can take Does a lot it? Of the chew. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you do with kiwi fruit and pineapple?
Oh, if you want to, if squid is to, if you just marinate it and put the squid into the kiwi fruit or pineapple.
Uh-oh. Sophie's mystery nuggets are... going up in the
Alice, these are vegetarian, which is why I'm
I reckon just turn it off now and let the residual heat.
Yeah, it'll be
pan.
Fine. They just need to be slightly warmed through, so that's fine.
That's right.
I kind of do want to set the fire alarm off, though.
Yeah, be good content.
Great. Anything
I mean, would you call the podcast with Al Brown 3.0 good content? I'm not sure.
Maybe not.
We might have run out of jokes by then.
Yeah.
We wouldn't throw it out. It'd all be captured forever.
But on the other thing, though, is surely... Do we want everything tender?
No, that's a problem.
We've got teeth. I like a bit of a chew.
Last time, didn't we? Yeah.
Did we talk about that?
I think we talked about sous vide slightly.
I have a strong preference for Scotch fillet over eye fillet.
Oh, we talked about that too.
I actually don't even. I think last time when we discussed this, you said, you know, but there is a time and a place for the eye fillet, and I would 99 times out of 100 prefer it to be Scotch. I just think that part of the eating experience is the texture, and it's sad when everything's monotexturous.
But I think it was a little bit like what Simon was saying about that. You know, the ribs that he cooked, that there was still, you know, you could pull it away from the bone, so there was still texture.
It's about getting it right for the right thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Interesting.
Well, I'm going to be frittering up a storm now that we've had such a great time.
Shall we go, Sophie prepares, shall we go through some of the regular segments? Well, yep. I thought it was really fun, our last Cook's Corner. There were some great tips, and I've learnt some new ones since we last gathered. My favourite one I've discovered is, instead of peeling the husk completely off the corn, fold it down to create kind of the concept of an ice cream cone.
Ooh, nice.
That you can hold the cob with, and it makes it really great for turning it on the barbecue.
And in the butter.
Yeah. So has this been done? I thought I changed the world.
Sorry, Simon.
You invented it.
Well, I like to share that with you. So it's changed my summer anyway. Mm. Another thing I learned is, this is around my issue with burning the nuts. So you can roast your nuts really nicely in the microwave.
Really?
Really?
Microwave your pine nuts for about 2 minutes, shake them about, and microwave them again for another 2 minutes. Let them rest because when they're still hot, they're kind of squishy.
Still soft.
And if they might need another minute, but you can perfectly roast your peanuts, your cashews, your pine nuts.
Do they get colour?
They do not brown, but they don't blacken either.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this is reminding me of your mother's microwave bacon.
Oh, that's right. The famous
bacon. Absolutely inappropriate behaviour, Simon.
When you really, really slandered your mother.
Well, if we don't agree with my microwaving my nuts, I hope you can agree that using the stems of coriander is very important. A lot
Absolutely.
Of flavour in there.
Yes.
It's more than a leaf. The stem is essential.
I chopped the stems for my corn fritters, but I was doing it in a hurry just before, and so there's probably quite, you know, big stalks in there, so I apologise. I also cut myself because I do seem to do that every time I cook.
How many times have you cut yourself in the last 2 weeks?
Quite a lot. It's quite worrying. Perhaps I should see a doctor.
Write this one down because I think we should do a story on it. But what's the worst injury you've ever had in the kitchen or cooking, Al?
There was in New Orleans, and they do a lot of blackened food, and so they keep skillets actually in the oven to keep them hot and then bring them out and do them on the stove. And someone had brought a skillet out and put it on top, and I grabbed it and it stuck to my hand. So that was pretty sore.
What do you do to a burn like that? Do you have to stop working for a couple of days?
Yeah, no, I had to stop working for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
When was that?
30-something years ago.
Wow.
If I'm 54 tomorrow, something like that.
So forthcoming with the age.
Oh, look, why is everyone all so like, oh, no, I'm 30 or no, I'm 40? Yeah, your age, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know.
We're all having a lovely time, however old we are.
We're not dead yet.
I thought I might just do the condiments for you. I'm having some regrets, but I've come this far, so I'm sticking with it.
So if he's dolloping on various things onto these balls of goodness.
It's not practical, really, to pass it all around with all the sauces.
No, that's true.
I'm going to talk about my favourite, stupidest but also funniest food injury. As I came home, my mum was roasting potatoes and I had the munchies, and my mind wasn't working as well as it should be, and I opened the oven, grabbed the potato with my bare hands straight out of the oven,
oh my God.
And I bit into it. Exposing the soft flesh of the potato that stuck to the roof of my mouth, very similar to the way the skillet stuck to Al's hand. And I, this story is actually made for television because I have to show you how I was trying to flick it off the roof of my mouth with my tongue. And it wouldn't go.
Like a gecko.
Believe me, it looks great.
Oh, gross.
It wouldn't go anywhere, and it was absolutely stuck to the roof
time
of my mouth.
Take a picture.
And the blister that it left across the entire roof of my mouth didn't go away
nasty.
For weeks.
My worst injury, the one I've had quite a few recently, as I mentioned, but I had a nasty one the other day when I was making sourdough in a big ceramic bowl, and somehow the bowl broke and a big piece of the bowl sliced my thumb. And it's now healed quite nicely, but it was quite gnarly and it bled a lot. I mean, you can't really see it anymore, but that's all, it was there.
Did the bread have a slightly metallic flavour?
Yeah, definitely some blood did get in the bread, but I just kept going.
How's it gone?
I can't think of a terrible kitchen injury. I remember seeing my mum slice half of her finger off with a mandolin once.
Oh. Burns definitely worse than a
mandolins,
cut.
Yeah, I've done some on there.
It was traumatic enough to induce her to lecture the hell out of anyone that ever picks up a mandolin now. Just basically say don't do it if you're not using the guard, and use the guard and use the tea towel. And
I've lost my guard of my mandolin, so I live life on the edge.
No one uses a guard.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Well, Sophie, this cloquette, like a French soldier in Algeria somewhere. It's very cross-cultural.
It's true. I like it. It's a bit colonial, but
if it were hotter, it would be fluffier.
No, it's yummy.
No, it's very good.
It's really good.
From Fatima's.
Mm. So I cheated because I've been working at Fatima's today, and I had suggested that we move the theme from barbecue, from the Long Lost podcast, to the ultimate fritter-off, because I was so, I thought it was such a revelation that we should all be making more fritters. And I didn't know that that was the theme until today. Oh, so
that's my bad.
Last minute,
you did suggest it, and Simon never replied, as per.
Last minute just whipped up. These are the vegetarian croquettes from Fatima's. And the staff there said that they joke that it's their 11 herbs and spices sort of thing, because how could so many ingredients go into something that's so small? Mm. But it's really got a lot of things in it. Delicious, though, don't you think?
Yeah.
I really, really like them. Would
it's
order.
Like a spunky falafel.
Wouldn't you prefer that, though, than a falafel?
Mm. Mm. Than most falafel.
Mm. Much less dense. But the Fatima's falafel, I think, is good. It's a really green, really herby type. Mm. But really light and fresh, I thought.
Alice, should we get you behind the stove before even my mum stops listening?
Yeah.
Does your mother listen to the podcast?
Yep, she's listened.
Did she listen to the time you slagged off her?
No, I haven't showed her that one.
Microwave bacon?
Microwaving bacon is wrong, mum. You should know better. My mother-in-law...
Between tissue paper?
On one piece, she lets it. It was an old microwave. She
does it matter?
Yeah, because it shoots.
If there is a way, I want to know how to do it.
So that you can be sure that you won't.
But my mother-in-law listens. She was listening with the whole family over Christmas. It was funny. Millie got sick of hearing my voice floating around the family Christmas and turned it off. And her father, hey, I wanted to know what Simon was going to say. So that was very cute and flattering.
Oh, my God. Family fan club.
Yeah.
It's a hot pan.
Had any honest feedback, Simon?
Less chewing in the microphone. Don't get as drunk as you got on the Christmas episode.
Oh,
that one really went on, didn't it?
We were very well looked after out at the hunting lodge.
Dears,
mate.
And it.
And for once, I was the sober driver, so I can attest to the fact that I was the least lit of the crew.
Were you patient? Were you a patient sober driver?
I was, yeah, because I'm so familiar with being on the other side of the table, I thought, I'm just going to embrace the novelty.
She was also multitasking. She managed to put an offer on the house while, stealing us around West Auckland, and eventually went on to buy that house.
Yeah, there were all sorts of things happening.
Have you moved in? We can discuss this.
We can. We actually settle tomorrow, so I've been emailing the lawyers all day today.
It's a really big day tomorrow. I'm taking the day off to work with my wife on Valentine's Day. It's Al's birthday. Sophie's moving into her house.
It's all happening. I think that the notion of getting the keys is kind of a funny one because we're not moving in tomorrow. So I said to David, what should we do? Should we go there and just get takeaways and eat them on the floor? But then we're kind of forcing ourselves to. And he's like, babe, I've got cricket tomorrow night. I was like,
David's got cricket. It's a huge
thing. Just do that.
Do you have gas, induction, electric?
Al's model of gas hob with a gas bottle is what's currently there, but I will be connecting it to the mains. I mean, the house is so tiny, you'd hardly ever know that there was space for gas bottle, but there is.
How important is a kitchen when you're looking for a potential home?
Huge.
What do you look for?
Of course. Storage is quite important.
Yeah.
I find it really difficult. I don't really have a massive pantry, but I think that kitchen equipment is just cumbersome, isn't it? So it's nice to have somewhere to put it.
I've always wanted one of those, I'll call it an Italian-style kitchen with the pots and pans hanging above me.
Oh, yeah.
I like the look of that. It's very rustic. Seems convenient. Might not be.
Kind of like Provençal.
Dusty, yeah. Dirty, greasy.
Well, if you use them enough.
Yeah. Or those. You use one pan.
Yeah, and then you get like.
And you have a whole lot of them up there.
Those shelves above the gas stove. Ooh, I hate going up there and cleaning them once every 6 months.
Yeah.
Well, I think, the opposite is also equally unattractive. You know, the modern kitchen where everything is away.
Yes.
I'm like, but what if I want to grab my tongs and what if I want to... You want some things to be on top.
Yeah.
Herbs. It's like some people are too trendy to even display their herbs. Alice is making a vegetable fritter.
It's called a corn fritter.
Oh! Named after its main ingredient, corn.
Yeah.
Which is another classic New Zealand fritter, isn't it? We all grew up with the creamed corn fritter.
I absolutely that used to be a Saturday lunch. Creamed corn.
Yeah,
creamed corn on Vogels with a poached egg for dinner when there's nothing else.
Yeah, that's Sunday night, right?
Creamed
there.
Corn in a cheese toastie, I think, is very good.
Mm. Can someone talk to me about what one does to corn to make it creamed? Because I think that the answer is just to blitz it.
Correct.
So you don't add anything else?
Well, you could add cream if you'd like, but you blitz it, fresh corn.
I'm not normally one to name and shame, but I went to a cafe in Parnell about 3 days ago, and the dish that I ordered was called creamed corn, and it was kernels. It wasn't creamed. So I thought maybe it was a loose interpretation of creamed corn, and they'd just given it a really quick blitz. So, but it's one of my absolute favourites.
Al Brown is giving Alice...
That's pretty good, eh? You're going to like this one.
Mad props.
Oh. This is the best one.
That one looks not cool.
I love corn fritters.
No, I know there's cheese in it. That's what I love about it.
Is there?
So it's salty and sweet.
Ooh. Is it like...
Do you know where the salt comes from?
Grated cheddar.
And cheese?
Yeah.
And? Are there olives in there? Is that right?
There are olives.
Oh, there are olives in there too.
Take that off. Will that be right?
Oh, how exciting,
Alice.
Well,
do you eat corn fritters a lot?
No. That's the fritter of the day right there.
Oh. Yes.
Yes.
Did you hear that, people?
Oh, my gosh. So last time Simon got the prompt.
Oh, no.
No, I love it.
His face fell. He's like, it's good. It's fine.
Alice, that time that Al Brown told you that your fritter was fritter of the day.
But actually,
burn the recording,
tell me
Tina.
Try those.
Oh, we've got a thingy to go with it.
Doesn't even need a thing.
It's a recipe I've never cooked before, but I cooked it because it is Emma Boyd, our recipe contributor at the Spinoff Food. As I'm sure you've all seen, she contributed that the other day, that recipe, and it is corn, olive, cheddar, fritter. So I whipped it up. It's bloody good.
I really love a corn fritter for breakfast. And I think that corn fritters and eggs go really well together. The other favourite corn fritter of mine is the corn and prawn fritter.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Where you blitz half of the corn and half of the prawn, and then you keep the other kernels whole and the chopped up prawn whole. Really yummy one. Sarah Tuck's cookbook.
Good recipe.
Which is called Coming Unstuck. And it's got, you serve it with avocado and coriander and lime.
Mm. Yum. And Al Brown is not lying. Alice is, just because Alice is his family friend.
Oh my God, you guys didn't disclose that you know each other?
This corn fritter is exceptional. The cheese makes it creamy and salty, and it's so salty.
No, my sister used
Alice didn't forget to salt her
my
corn
My sister used to look after Al's children in
That's
the olden
right.
days.
That is right.
I'd like to say he named his daughter Alice after me, but she didn't meet me till she was about one, so I guess that didn't happen.
I don't think it did.
Sophie, what are your tips for the month? Cook's Corner.
Oh, yeah, Cook's Corner.
cooking tips for the month.
You can use the ones you used last time. Oh, no, you didn't fill out the run sheet. Then
I can go first if you want to think.
Go, Alice.
So mine last time related to the skewers I'd made, and it was something I forgot to do, which is soak the wooden skewers in water before cooking them so they didn't burn.
So important.
Yeah, and do it in a bottle, because then they will stay fully submerged. Put them in a bottle, fill with water, put the lid on. But another tip that I would like to have had, but I don't, is does anyone have a good tip for how to get silk off the corn cob after you've shucked it?
Burn it? Like Turkish, when you go to a good Turkish barber, he'll burn off the hairs on your ear and the hairs in your nose.
Yeah.
Maybe you could do the same thing with a little blowtorch on your
Because there might be some
spray can of fly spray and a lighter.
Is it true that each line of silk, there's the same amount of kernels that there are to each silk?
Oh. I did not know that.
Pretty I sure would like to right. count.
Oh, that's awesome.
I Googled it.
One per one.
That's We had people said use a little brush.
We had a bit of a corn off in my household last week because my husband and I drove to Huntley and back for a funeral, and they have the corn on the side of the road, stalls. 8 big cobs of corn for $5.
Wow.
That's good.
I've done all of the things that you could possibly imagine with corn in the last week.
Sophie's husband, really? David, has also been growing corn. How's it turned out?
It's sort of, he's got, you'd say the cobs are half the size that they will ultimately be, so not bad.
Oh, so not ready to eat yet, though?
No, not yet, but I'm sure they'll be delicious.
There's nothing better than corn straight off the plant. It is so juicy and sweet.
He's proud as punch.
Have you come up with a tip yet while we've been waiting?
I don't remember what my tips were last time, but I'd say that one of the greatest successes I've had recently cooking is when you go on a boat or you go for a picnic. We've been going to the bottom of Ponui Island and for
Chamberlain Bay.
Yeah, is that what it's called? That's where we were, because someone looked it up on maps the other day and I never looked it up. But what we did was, instead of the old ham sandwiches on the beach scenario, I had given my in-laws one of those baby Webers about 3 years ago for Christmas, still in the box, obviously not.
Baby Q.
Yes, they were not into it, obviously. But we unwrapped it, assembled it, and we've been making, one day we did really amazing pork sausage hot dogs with like sauerkraut and mustard, and so easy to just pack up condiments as they are and take spoons and knives with you. And then the second time we did just an epic beef burger, because I am a believer that you don't really need anything else other than beef mince and salt and pepper in the patty.
Maybe a slice of cheese.
No, sorry. I'm just saying in the patty. Oh, so you really don't have anything to pack for your picnic other than mince. I would pre-salt and pepper it and roll it into balls. But then, we take cheese and lettuce and tomato and, again, all the condiments. But I think that there was something particularly celebratory about having a hot meal on a hot beach.
I think Sophie's tip is have more picnics.
Yeah.
I'm thinking there's probably a fire ban and maybe you were breaking the law on Ponui Island, but I like that you were a rebel.
You like that I was
anything for
staring danger in the face?
Yeah.
Good. Thanks, Alice.
And now the big question is, share your you've shared your recipes. There are no secret recipes. Have you got any secret cooking tips that you'd like to?
Well, because we're sort of barbecuing, I think the big problem is that people keep turning the food the whole time. The food doesn't cook in the air, so leave it on the grill. That's my tip.
And I actually just remembered a really good one that you had last time, which was about entertaining. And Al said, if you're serving a fritter or you're serving a nice piece of barbecued meat, why not get the condiment or the sauce that you're serving it with and put it underneath that on the plate, and then put the meat or the fritter on the top and garnish. And you look really fancy. And
that's your yogurt situation, your hummus situation, your baba ganoush situation.
Yeah. You make
all
it
easy.
All
those sort of sauces, yeah.
Delicious. Great idea.
And the big tip on that as well, if you're going to buy Lisa's hummus or baba ganoush, take it out of the little plastic dish, put it into a little cute bowl and say you made it yourself.
Yeah, maybe put some like little AG on the top.
Oh my gosh, I've remembered my other one, which is, this is going to be really quick, an amazing condiment which is extremely versatile, and it was from the Palomar cookbook that I was given, that's a Middle Eastern restaurant in London, but it was their recipe for zug, which is kind of like a chimichurri meets salsa verde. So it's just a green herby sauce, basically, from Yemen. And it's absolutely, I think it says on the recipe, Yemeni chimichurri or something. But oh my goodness, so easy. You put it in like your Nutribullet, blitz it with garlic, and it's got a bit of cumin and coriander ground in it. And it was the most delicious thing. We just put it all over everything for days.
Yum.
Delicious. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Al Brown, especially seeing it was round two.
Yeah.
We've eaten beautiful food both times, and it's been really fun.
Yeah, thank you for coming back. We really appreciate it. Simon emailed us apprehensively and said, my heart is broken, but I'm hoping Al will accept our invitation to return.
It was so much fun the last time. It was just as much this time. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks to Tina, our producer.
We always forget to thank Tina. Shout, Tina.
Woo!
Cheers.
Cheers to you, Tina.
Ka kite.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spin-Off. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spin-Off member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.